This is Embracing Change with Lakrita Bowman and Jennifer Osborne.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the next episode of Embracing Change. We are so glad you've joined us. You know, without you, this podcast would not exist. And we're thankful for every listener that tunes in to every episode that we put out there. So thank you for your listening. We're glad for you. We're going to continue on with our theme of resetting the comparison of body, soul, and spirit for this season, which we are on season 5. So for this episode, we're going to talk about the soul as it relates to the triune man. The soul is something that we don't think about a whole lot, and we had a conversation not too long ago with someone else that was talking about what the soul is and how it relates to the spirit and the body and what all is contained in there. So this is going to be a really good episode as far as teaching people, give them more insights if they've never really thought about it.
I think so. I think that a lot of times we talk about our personality more than we talk about our soul. We talk about, our body health, as we talked about last week. And that's why, you know, I want us to do some comparison of, you know, the body versus the soul versus the spirit, the triune man, not just looking at yourself from the natural, but there's also a invisible and a visible piece of your life that you don't always tap into. And I think it takes a consciousness. A lot of things I think has happened since COVID that has slowed people down. And I do believe that has created us to, there has created opportunity and space for us to begin to look at ourselves from a triune level. I'm not saying everybody has and will, and some people may not even believe in that. Mm. It doesn't make it not true just because you don't believe in it.
Right.
And so you hear about meditation and awareness and mindfulness and all of those things. And I've come to believe that that is a space of getting our soul redeemed and transformed. And so when you look at the soul, it says, what are we? Our soul is who we are as people. It's a combination of activity of our mind, our will, and our emotions.
Pretty complex.
Exactly. And so we can go into, you know, the activity of just our mind. Let's talk about our mind. You know, when you think about, I don't know what, when, I guess I'll ask you, I say to you, what is your mind, Jennifer? What would you tell me?
I would say my mind contains my thoughts, whereas my brain contains all the electrical impulses. So the mind would be where I have reason, where I think about my emotions, where I filter the world, maybe.
Okay. And so, therefore, you would say your mind is different than your emotion.
I would.
And you would say your mind is different from your will.
Yes. Because I think sometimes where that becomes clear is sometimes you can't always control. Well, you can, but it feels like you can't control your will sometimes, but you obviously can. You can exert your mind over your will. Do you know what I mean? Like, you want something, but then you tell yourself, but that's probably not good for me.
Do you believe your will is your choice?
Boy, you're getting into some deep questions. Do I think my will is my choice? Sometimes, maybe. Not always, because I think sometimes, because of the flesh man, we have certain...
What is the flesh man? When you define the flesh man, what do you define the flesh man as? Because the flesh has no ability without someone operating it.
Right. So when I say your flesh, it would be like that part of you that has desire, that's influenced by your environment.
So that would be your soul.
That would be your soul, yeah. And sometimes you can exert your will, or I'm sorry, your thought over your will, where you, like I said, you want, like for me all the time, I'm wanting Chick-fil-A or McDonald's. Like, I want that. My will wants that. And I have to stop myself and say, maybe I don't eat that all the time because it's really not good for me. So then I have to.
And who told you it wasn't good for you?
doctors, society, the messages I get.
Because if the Bible says that everything God made is good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Then who told you that Chick-fil-A wasn't good? Did.
I think probably excess is what you're looking for there, right? Doing it to excess. It can be good as long as it's not done to excess.
Exactly. And so even if you're.
In a way that's bad. And believe me, I take it to excess.
And so therefore, when you say, you know, your choice and your will, your flesh or your soul and your emotions, your thoughts, your mind, your will, and your emotions. I just say with the soul man, it is, where your will, but my will is what I end up doing. Paul says it well in Romans 7. He said, that which I would do is that which I should not do is what I end up doing. Yeah. That which I know to do, I do not. Oh, wretched man that I am, who's going to save me from me?
Oh, yeah.
Jesus. Yeah. And so when I look at that scripture in Romans 7, and I think about what he's saying, is that we know what to do, but we don't always do it. And why don't we? Because we don't feel like it. Because our soul, who is sits in the triune man, and our soul is not where our heart lives, it is a piece of us that where we have a piece of us inside of us, and whether you are a Christian or no, not a Christian, if you were created in this world and God created the world and he created everybody, and it says in the Bible, which I believe in, and the Bible says that, and the Lord God formed man from the dust of the ground, he breathed into his nostril the breath of life, and man became a living soul. Genesis 2 and 7, a living soul. Hmm. So that means when he breathed into him, it awakened his will, his mind, his emotion. And man became a living person. And that's why it says the soul is who we are as people. So we have that, all those different emotions. And every time I feel something doesn't make it the truth, but it makes it authentic for what I'm feeling, but it doesn't make it the truth. It just makes it a feeling. And so often we have lived our lives out of what we think, what we feel, and then what we will. See what I'm saying? So mm-hmm. then you become what you will. And so even your personality is a place where I have come to find out is that, you know, our soul is always being transformed. I am not the person I was 10 years ago because I'm consistently submitting my will, my emotions, and my thinking, my mind, to a greater power than myself.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so, therefore, not only is my soul a place of life for me, it's a part of who I am, and it's a consistent piece of who I am. And it's constantly being redeemed here a little, there a little, piece by piece. And the reason that is because life itself is so complex.
Yeah.
And we also, what lives in our soul is our memories, our experiences.
Yeah.
What also lives in there is our expression of who we are. It goes back to the visible versus the invisible. Who am I really seeing? Who am I really experiencing? Who are all the people behind me? What did they, the disappointments, the pain, all of that lives in my soul. And so therefore, a lot of times we have choices. And when I ask you, do you think your choice is your will, I believe that every choice I make, I have power over it. I do. I believe that. That's my belief, is that whether it's Chick-fil-A, I can choose to not eat it or I can choose to eat it.
And you can condition your will, too.
And I can condition my will.
Yeah. Now, I would say absolutely. The initial thought, though, like your initial will, you're not necessarily thinking, I'm going to make myself want that. You know what I mean? But you're crucifying your flesh in certain situations.
I'm crucifying my desires. Desires.
Yeah. The flesh man is what you're saying.
Yeah, it's that desire to have a better understanding of the where, the what, the how, the who. Where did that come from? Who is saying that to me? Why am I saying that? Why do I want that? What is going on behind the feeling that I want to maybe overcompensate? Come on.
Mm-hmm.
Why do I want to, why do I want that? Why do I want to go there? Because usually when we have strong, strong, deep level emotions, if we have not dealt with them in a really healthy way, they will always be the dictator of our lives.
Absolutely.
And they will tell us how to live because we have not submitted that part of our emotion, which is part of our soul, to our spirit, which we'll talk about down the road on the podcast, but we haven't submitted it to the point where we disciplined it. The fruit of the spirit, one of them is self-control.
Yeah.
That's a fruit. And if God didn't think it was a fruit, then he wouldn't have put it in there with gentleness and long-suffering. He believes that we can have self-control. So in other words, that I really can have control over my soul, where my mind lives, my intellect, my will, my emotions. You know, some people say intellect, some people say mind. That is where your concepts and consciousness, you know, all of those things are. I can be very aware of who I am and how I am. And so, but it takes practice for us to do that. First of all, you got to be aware and admit that every thought you have does not mean that it is a real thought that you're having. You don't know in the atmosphere or your experiences or even from someone else. You can be in the presence of someone else and all of a sudden you'll start feeling a certain way and you'll wonder, like, I was fine just a minute ago. This was not even something I thought about. And I deal with this more so on the level of transforming people who are walking and discovering who they are after drugs, alcohol, sex, those kind of things, because a lot of times they have lived on impulses and they have not disciplined themselves in a way to be consciously aware that when they have triggers, they have said, I go into a certain place and I have a certain smell, which we'll talk about later. And that smell will remind my mind of what I used to do. Mm. Well, then it's your soul that in your mind, where your memory lives, it triggers something that makes your behaviors then desire. And we can have false and true desires. And we can have intimacy, into me you see, but intimacy with something that we've done so long, it's like having a relationship with it. And so it can be false and it can be true and it can be healthy and unhealthy. And you have to distinguish after a certain time of your own life. But your first responsibility is to admit that there's something greater than you, pushing you, doing things and creating you to make choices that you don't always want to make. But it goes back to what Paul says, that which I would do, I do not, but that which I do not do, that which I should not do is what I end up doing. Oh, wretched, it's the war that goes on inside of us of the triune person.
Yeah.
And our body carries out a lot of the stuff the soul tells it to do. And so it comes down to that middle ground in our lives that we have to decide how we're going to deal with our disappointments. How am I going to deal with my pain, my memory, my experiences? And all of that comes from our soul and being aware of it, being conscious, being awakened.
And walking through it.
And a lot of us don't want to walk through that because it's so much that you give up, honestly. It's not something. That's why I said it's a piece by piece, a little by little, here a little, there a little, precept on precept. It's just it's a consistent conscious continuation of growth and development.
Yeah.
And it's not something you just decide, I'm going to give it up today, because the day you tell yourself you're going to give up something, 20 times that much of it, you're going to want more. And it's like,
yeah, that's true.
So it's just about being so aware of why you want it. I think when you can get to the why, you can get to the what, then you can get to the how.
Yeah, you can process it in a way that's healthy.
Exactly.
When we talk about mindfulness, there are lots of times because pain is so, it can be so big and your emotions can feel so big that, and if you've lived with a lot of trauma and a lot of pain, your reactions become automatic. You don't even stop to slow down to think about what you're feeling and why. And so to actually process it in a healthy way, mindfulness says you have to feel it to heal it. Well, that's really hard for someone who's lived with a lot of pain to allow themselves to go to a place where they feel the pain and then start saying, okay, why am I feeling this? What's behind that? What is it really saying about me? Like really starting to interrogate that emotion a little bit, if you will. And that's the way you process it. That's a healthy way to process it. If you never do that, you never know why you react the way you do all the time. So
yeah, and I did a speech not too long ago, and I talked about naming my abuser. I put a name on him because no longer do I just live in the experience of the rape and the pain. I actually live and forgive the person.
Yeah.
So, but that took work for me to, but I had to sit in the pain, see the disvalue that created me to devalue me. It created me to become a thief. It's just so many layers. And then once I was able to wash off those belief systems about myself and really start seeing Mr. Sam as a person just like me who have done wrong to other people as well, I was able to realize because of my spiritual and Christian beliefs that God doesn't weigh debts higher than the other.
Right.
That they're all on the same scale. And so when he puts them on the scale, which, you know, I'm just saying he doesn't make one bigger than the other. So whatever I've done, when it says that I want to be forgiven my debt, then I have to see Mr. Sam as a creation of God, not what he did to me. But that takes work. But first of all, I got to dig in my soul.
Yeah.
I've got to dig into the soul man of me and get out the memories and the pain and the disappointment and even the experience. Even if the experience was painful, I have to go and sit in it and really deal with it, just like disrespectful of authority when I was put in Longview for, you know, almost 2.5 years. When I was only supposed to stay 30 days, then that broke down my trust for authority. So then, therefore, when I had to go back and deal with my soul, where did that come from? Why don't I trust people? Why don't I had to go and sit in that place in my soul, my will, my emotions, you know, my intellect, my memory, my pain, my disappointment. I had to go sit in it, not just rest. I mean, take a chair, sit there and truly understand the dynamics of how I got to a place where I did not trust anyone but me. And then it started from that moment where that judge who were in authority gave me his word that I would stay 30 days, and I ended up there for 2.5 years. So I was forgotten. So then rejection and abandonment and all of that, again, from Mr. Sam, from now Judge Black. That's why I actually call their names, because I had to go and sit with them and look at them and begin to see them across from me and talk with them about how that made me feel and what I thought and what I did to myself and how much damage I did to me because of one choice, whether conscious of it. Come on, because right. I'm not even sure they were conscious. You know what I mean? When I say conscious of it, they were not thinking about how can they hurt Lakrita.
No, they were just reacting in their moment, too, in a super unhealthy way, obviously.
Well, I think when it comes to Mr. Sam, yes. But yes. Judge Black, I think he was just doing what he did in some kind of way. because there was no follow-up. That's why if you look at my life now, I'm real, real, real strong about follow-through, mm-hmm. takeaways. Mm-hmm. And I think that that came from that experience because I believe that his paperwork, from what I learned later, got lost or it got misfiled. My paperwork got misfiled. So no one ever came back and checked up on that file to the point that it left me there for 2.5 years.
Wow, I did not know that.
And so my soul, my memory, created my personality, which I'm a person, to believe, again, that, you know what I'm saying? Once I found that out, I just realized that I'm going to all, you know, my thought is no one's ever going to do me like that, and I'm not going to do myself that way. I'm always going to hold myself accountable, and I'm always going to make sure, and I'm going to check my eyes, and you know, dot my I's and check, you know, cross my T's and whether that out of that came perfection or need to control. And so you got to be able to sit with all of those things that's in your soul from where you got that experience. Where did you get that? Where did you get that memory? Where did you get that? You know, where did that all come from to create the personality and the outcomes of who you've become? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Totally is. It's an unraveling, though, when you're trying to go back through it. It's not a one and done because it goes deep.
And it continues to go deep. And it's not just about that, because that experience, I'm now 61. That experience happened to me when I was 12. And if I'm not careful, that's why I say about the soul being transformed little by little. When there are certain things that happen even now, if I'm not careful, I can be triggered by that memory now, and I am almost 40, 50 years later. And so that's where I know that when I am aware of it and I'm present and I'm pulling myself down and I'm pulling my thoughts down and I'm pulling my emotions down and I'm stepping back and creating space for grace, for my soul to still be redeemed little by little, I can still say, That may be a true feeling, but this ain't the truth.
Yeah.
And so my feelings are valid.
Yep.
I acknowledge that I have them. They're my emotions. But it doesn't mean that those emotions try to tell my thought or my mind this, and this.
It doesn't always tell the truth.
Right. Well, it pushes me. It tries to push me into believing the worst of others because of my lack of... because my biggest issue was not trusting people. So if I'm not careful, it will push those thoughts as really becoming true, and then I will set up a formation in my own personality and my own emotion and become defensive, offended, and I protected. All of those things will come out of my soul.
Yeah. It reminds me of, I had a conversation actually this morning with my mentor, and we were talking about creating new thought patterns. And she was saying, you know, it is work to go from having, like, the normal way it would work. You have a thought and it leads to a feeling, then it leads to a behavior. And then next time you have that thought, you go to that feeling, you go to that behavior. And she said it can be like this weird cycle. And she said to stop that, you have to stop it from the thought. And before you even allow yourself to feel a certain way, because sometimes your thought will create a feeling like, oh, they're being really unfair to me, or they had to have known that really hurt my feelings, when really the person may not have had any clue. But then your feeling is, I'm angry at them. And then you have to say, well, why am I angry at them? And where does that really come from? So it's like unraveling or stepping out of that cycle.
And that's where the soul man lives. The soul person, the soul piece of us.
Yeah.
And that's why it's so, one of the things that is most difficult to deal with. It's easier to deal with losing weight than it is to lose the weight of a soul. You know, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
To be weightless, to let your soul become weightless. It's easier to lose 20 pounds than it is for you to lose weight off of your soul.
Wow. Yeah.
Because your soul is so heavy. with experiences, memory, pain. And the older you get from a child, from the time you were, and it didn't just start when you were born into the world, it was when you were still in utero and you were in your mother's womb. And how did your mother treat you? And how did she nurture you? Did she speak to you? Did she listen to music? You know, all of that matters. And it kind of creates your person, which is your soul.
Let me ask you a question then. So would you say that epigenetics, while it has a basis in the physical person, that it also has basis in the soul?
Oh, definitely.
Okay.
I definitely believe that. And that's why it talks about generational curses.
Right, right.
Because it comes from that piece of it, of the soul. Like, I'm going to give you an example. Now, if it was just genetics and physical, then let's go here. I didn't raise my son, right? And like, I didn't, when I say raise him, he didn't live with me, live with his father, very, you know, good man, you know, never went to prison, pretty much did the right thing, you know, blah, 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 you know? So then you would think, well, my son may have had that experience of not being with his mom for about 4 or 5 years in his life, but then I've been in his life longer, right? Then I was out of his life. I've been in his life for 28 years. I was only out of his life for 4. So my point is he'll be 38 next week. So when from the time he was born to now, and if you look at it, I've been back in his life for 28, you know, consistently in and out of his life from the time he was born till he was about 4. You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. then out of his life from 4 all the way to 9. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then back in his life when he turned 10. So does that make sense? So then you would think, okay, well, if it was epigenetics, as you was talking, and just genetics, then the reason I say no, I think that the soul of generations, because why would my son feel a need to go to prison? Do you follow what I'm saying?
I do, yeah.
Well, I think because in his own soul, his will, his intellect, his mind, and I've said this before on the podcast, that I believe that it's generational. I never met my biological mother until I was 37, but my biological brother had been to prison 4 times.
Hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So something generationally, you know, my mother never went to prison, but she, you know what I'm saying, she had her own life, but my 2 brothers had went to prison and was on drugs. So you look at that, and then my son, you know, his father didn't go, but I did, but he did. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you look at all the dynamics of where did that come from. I think that that comes from generational curses, which then is more than just a physiological thing. I think it's a spiritual thing. I think it's a soulish thing. I just believe that it has so much more to do with just experiences. I think it has so much more to do with just genetics. It has so much more to do. I think it's not either or, it's and in both. Does that make sense?
It does. It totally does. I had an example, too, of like my brother who was given up for adoption ended up taking his own life. The thing I struggled with was suicidal thoughts and taking my own life. I had a nephew that was not raised with us that ended up taking his own life. Like there's so many examples in my family where we've been, where we're not a close family because we're so fractured. And yet that has
been a thread.
It has been something that's been common in our family. Depression, suicide.
Self-worth.
I can see it all through my family.
And then you wonder, okay, where did that come from? Well, if you're...
Somehow it came through the line.
Came through the line.
Yeah.
And then if your mother had it or your father, which we know had some issues, then, you know, you've told your story. So therefore, then that's his soulish rim. If it was not redeemed to a point where he's seen himself and worked on himself and got better, then his behavior illustrated to you all to some level in a soulish mind, will, emotion, that those behaviors were okay.
Right, yeah.
So that it was transferred over to you all saying, that is okay to kill yourself. It is okay not to like you. It is okay not to have the best vision or version of who you are, to not think yourself highly, to not believe that you're valuable. It's that's okay.
Even from my mother's side.
Exactly. So if then you got a dual, it's the same way, you know what I'm saying? So I think that the soul is such a big piece of our lives that create us to keep going into a repetitious destructive behavior of self-abuse and self-destruction. Mm. And if we don't stop and deal with the soul, man, you know what I mean? Then it doesn't matter. You know what I'm saying? We will really not understand our spirit or our body until we deal with our soul.
Yeah.
Our soul, we have to deal with the seat of our soul.
It's so complex. I think for us as people, that's probably the most complex part of who we are. Like, we think about how fearfully and wonderfully made we are, and we think about that physically. You know, like, it's pretty amazing that we have a heart that beats, and how the brain controls all the our organs, and we have a liver that, like, filters, you know,
the
stuff
waste
we take in, and, like, yeah, all of that stuff.
And
like,
the pancreas that tells our insulin and right. tells our, and it does it naturally.
Right.
Nobody has to tell it.
Right.
It just does it.
That is a fearful and a wonderful thing. But then you have to think, it doesn't just mean the physical. It means the soul as well. That you, like you said, is
and
being
transformed.
And you're
responsible for the soul.
Yeah.
It doesn't have, it doesn't decide on it. It decides on its own if you don't deal with it. It'll do what it does.
Yeah.
Like Paul said, it will always lean to what its greatest desire is and what its greatest want is.
Yeah.
It will always run... I call it wretched.
Oh, wretched man. Yeah.
Oh, wretched man that we are. It will always run wretched if we're not careful and we don't deal with it and bring it back into submission and become aware of it, of asking ourselves why, what, where, and how did I get here? And that's a consistent, conscious question that we always have to ask ourselves, regardless to what's happening and how it's happening. And that deals with our soul. And it is always, you know what I'm saying? It's a consistent redemption.
Yeah.
It's always being redeemed. It's
and
all
transformed.
And transformed
little by little.
I'm not as quick to go over to distrust as I used to be, because now mm-hmm. I practice more of seeing the good, even if the evil is present. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not as willing to believe that someone is out to get me all the time, or that is because now I'm more consciously aware that everybody is not thinking about me. They don't have me on their mind. That's just, right. you know, that people ain't thinking about me. They think about them.
Right.
And so
right.
I have to be more curious and more open to be able to go ask the questions and not be fearful or don't think I already know, and be willing to submit to myself and say, come on down, pull that thought down, as it talks about taking strongholds, pulling them down, imaginations that try to exalt itself higher than God and truth and life. Sometimes you got to pull it down, and pulling it down means just being aware of it, that it doesn't necessarily mean that it's the truth. It could be a truth, but it doesn't mean it's the truth. And then let's try to find out and be curious enough to find out what the truth is.
Right. And maybe not even to think that it's written in stone forever. Like, some people think it's impossible for them to change, or it's impossible for someone else to change. And I look at that and go, unless there's some sort of mental deficit in some way, like brain damage, whatever, mm-hmm. I believe anybody can change anytime. Is it easier sometimes than it is in other ways? Yes. Yes. Some change is hard. Some change is easy. Easier, I should say, because change is always, it's a conscious thing. But yeah, giving room for that and allowing that to happen, and to recognize that I can change. Everything is not written in stone. Thank God. God has given me a heart of flesh that is, he can mold and help me deal with that kind of stuff.
And that's why when you get the word, you know, and the Greek word for soul is psyche. And that's where psychology comes,
yeah.
psychiatrists,
yeah.
because they're really dealing with that part of the person when they're working with them, whether it's through mental illness, whether it is just through some personality of trauma. They're working with the psyche, and they're trying to change and help you reposition how you think, your intellect, how you perceive things, how you see things, how you hear things, how you remember things, how you, you know, smell things, you know, all of those, even your five senses happen to deal with the psyche.
Yeah.
And you have, to, you know, part of the soul. And so it comes in different ways. And so we have to be aware of that. Even in psychology, that's where the root word of a Greek word, psyche, it is dealing with the mind, dealing with your will, dealing with your emotions.
Yeah.
And that is your soul.
So cool. That's so cool. We are fearfully and wonderfully made.
We are.
And it blows the mind. No pun intended. All right, folks. Until next episode, you'll want to join us because it's going to be like a part two to this conversation. We'll be talking about the visible versus the invisible as it relates to the soul. Until next time, thank you.
Hi, guys. Every week we get the honor of spending time with you, sharing our hearts, and offering insights into all the ways we get turned around as people, and hopefully showing an escape route to better choices. Another place that is offering the same type of path for better opportunities is City Gospel Mission. Since 1924, they've been a beacon of hope to the homeless, those recovering from life-controlling issues, youth, and to those needing job services. If you'd like to volunteer or donate, you can visit www.citygospelmission.org. That is www.citygospelmission.org. Thanks.
You've been listening to the Embracing Change podcast. Music production and mastering by Gone Coastal Productions. Podcast editing and production by Jennifer Osborne. Podcast copyright 2020 by Lakrita Bowman.